Rest of the news, but now it's time for Health Action.
I'm Mark Hannay, director of the Metro New York Healthcare for All campaign and a member of the Health Action Collective that brings you this program every week. In this week's program, we're going to be doing our annual World AIDS Day special. This program started out probably almost 20 years ago, I guess now, as a program that centered around issues of importance to the HIV/AIDS community. Really one of the first programs on the air in New York City, if not nationally, to really with an exclusive focus on HIV/AIDS issues from the perspective of the activist community. We've since broadened out to cover the whole range of health topics, but we like to come back to our roots every once in a while, and World AIDS Day is a good time to do that. Actually, World AIDS Day officially was yesterday, December 1st. We're going to be getting an update from some activists here in New York about what are some of the top issues and concerns that the activist community is working on these days. So, and welcome back to Health Action. I'm Mark Hannay. In this week's interview segment, we're going to be focusing on World AIDS Day, which was officially yesterday, although some activities, I understand, around the city here have spilled over in today. It's kind of the time each year when we have an opportunity to pause and reflect a little bit on all the ramifications of the AIDS crisis since it was first identified in the early 1980s. Joining us to discuss what the activist community is up to these days is Terry, a member of ACT UP New York, and she's joined by Yaden Ademai, who's also a member of ACT UP New York. Welcome, Terry and Yaden, to Health Action.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great. Terry, let me start with you. Let's set the table a little bit for this discussion and just get some basic facts on the table. What's the situation with the AIDS epidemic now that we're some 30-plus years into it? What does it look like worldwide here in America, maybe more close to home?
When we look at worldwide, what we're looking at is more than 34 million people are currently living with HIV around the world, and specifically about the United States, we're looking at more than 1.1 million people living with HIV. In terms of the number of people who become newly diagnosed with HIV each year, we're looking at about 2.5 million people becoming newly infected each year, and of those, 50,000 in the United States alone. When we look at New York State, and specifically New York City, I think it's kind of really important to kind of look at our boroughs and interestingly, how different they are in terms of HIV. The Bronx really is kind of the uncontested epicenter of HIV. In particular, when we look at the South Bronx, has death rates, which are 30% higher than those in some of the other wealthier New York City neighborhoods. ACT UP is certainly kind of tracking kind of what's happening in terms of the rates of HIV, and we have very specific communities that we're concerned about. But one stat that I can talk to you about is kind of young people who kind of are in the ages 13 to 29. Almost 40% of new infections are among young people ages 13 to 29. So, when we think about kind of communities that we're really concerned about, we're concerned about people who are young in that age of 13 to 29, but we're really concerned about young men who have sex with men who are of color. We're seeing that community being disproportionately affected, and we're also seeing the transgender community, particularly transgender women, being disproportionately affected.
That's interesting to hear. I can sort of understand a certain logic, I guess, around young men of sex, men of color. What's the speculation on why this is emerging, particularly for transgender women?
Well, I mean, I think within that particular community, we have kind of all the isms that kind of intersect together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, when we look at that particular community, I mean, just, you know, here in New York City in this last year, we've had, you know, a lot of unfortunate situations happen. You know, we've had several transgender women murdered. I think that community is disproportionately affected by traumatic events. I think it's harder to find employment. Certainly, they're discriminated against more. I think there is probably more opportunity to kind of look for work outside of kind of traditional work roles because they're not going to be likely to be employed by the traditional workforce, that they may be at risk for engaging in sex work.
Mm-hmm.
That might then put them more at risk. I would assume just kind of that community, because of the discrimination that they experience, they would be more likelihood to have higher risk for substance use, that would then, of course, put you more at risk for HIV. And I think it's a community that's just kind of, unfortunately, just ignored and in some senses just kind of looked at as, is there a community that you just don't worry about or throw away? And I would assume that also that there's a harder chance of engaging in trans-friendly medical care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why would you want to go get tested and take care of your health if you're afraid you're going to be treated poorly?
Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of the classic, what they term social indicators of health in the public health world.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yaden, let me turn to you. One of the big issues I understand that the AIDS activist community, and particularly ACT UP, has been focusing on within the last 6 months to a year or so are new ways to think about prevention of infection. Can you talk to us a little bit of some of the basics about what are those new strategies that are being talked about?
Okay, I'm glad you asked. There is... right now in ACT UP, a focus on PEP and PrEP, which are acronyms that stand for post-exposure prophylaxis and pre-exposure prophylaxis, a fancy way of saying taking a pill or taking medication after an exposure or taking medication before you get exposed and continually so that you know that you have an underlying degree of protection. In 2012, the FDA approved the medication Truvada, which is an HIV medication that combines two drugs together, and the FDA approved it for three separate categories of people at high risk. One is in HIV-negative people in romantic relationships or sexual relationships with HIV-positive partners regularly.
Mm-hmm.
They approved it for men who have sex with men in very high risk situations, whether it's they don't use condoms at all or they don't use it consistently, and also for individuals who may be in sex work situations or otherwise have not necessarily manageable HIV risks, they can take a medication that, when actually taken as directed, can provide above 99% protection from HIV infection, and more remarkably, taken 50% of the times, evenly every other day, got as high as 92% protection. So these are very extraordinary levels of consistent risk reduction based on just taking a pill. And for it's, you know, these medications have side effects, and that you definitely have to counsel patients before using them, But the idea is that these approvals are predicated on having quarterly visits, visiting a doctor four times a year, and being engaged in medical care overall. So PEP and PrEP are both, A, they're great ways of reducing HIV, period, but also they're great ways of engaging people in care who might not otherwise be in healthcare, particularly young men, and especially young men of color. These are subgroups that are traditionally avoidant of healthcare and may not have regular access to it even if they wanted to.
Yeah, in the health advocacy world that I operate in, there's a term we use called the quote-unquote young invincibles. Mm-hmm. That initially was kind of referred to this group as somewhat pejoratively as if it was a devil-may-care attitude, and yet the folks in the world, the young adults I work with, have kind of embraced that label and taken it out and tried to turn it around. It's a similar way that the LGBT community oftentimes has used the word queer. It's to appropriate it and use it for their own purposes. It's kind of interesting to think about that.
Oh, of course. It's an adaptive strategy, and the old have always looked down on the young and vice versa. So there's some adaptation has to occur.
Terry, there's this use of post-exposure prophylaxis and pre-exposure prophylaxis has generated some controversies around it. Can you tease out sort of the basics of what those controversies are?
Sure.
Well,
one is that there's a fear of disinhibition, that people who have access to PEP or PrEP may risk compensate and act invincible or take greater risks than they would have previously. However, what studies have been done thus far have shown, in fact, that you actually tend to find an increase in conscientiousness among people who are taking these medical protocols. Some people are, let's be blunt, most people are not regularly using condoms. Maybe half of gay men, half of men who have sex with men, are just not using them at all, and the half that do use them intermittently, which every condom study for decades has shown is just not good enough. Intermittent condom use is barely protective at all. It's barely any risk reduction. You need to, if you're going to use condoms for their protective benefit, you need to use them consistently at a very high rate of adherence. And there's been, you know, some tension in the community about, oh, are we abandoning the vision of everyone using condoms? And I think we are. I think, in fact, what we're abandoning is the romanticization of that idea. Condoms remain a first-line defense against HIV, a fantastic tactic for protecting oneself both from HIV and from a broad range of other STDs also.
Mm-hmm.
There's many infections condoms do prevent. But I think that they had mistakenly been presumed to be an overall strategy rather than the best tactic. And I think it's a painful process happening in the community where condoms are assuming a primary role in a broader prevention arsenal, a broader toolkit.
Terry, to turn to you, there's been some controversies around people having access to these two forms of therapy, post-exposure or pre-exposure, and when they see healthcare providers. Can you talk a little bit about what that's been all about? I know ACT UP's been focusing some on that.
Well, I want to just kind of mention something that I think is really important for your listeners
sure.
to know, particularly around PEP, post-exposure prophylaxis. I think it's important for folks to know that if you feel like you've been exposed to HIV, at least in New York City, in New York State, the New York State Department of Health guidelines are recommending that people present to a medical provider within 36 hours of the exposure. So it's really important that people know that they need to present within 36 hours. I mean, the max is 72 hours of mm-hmm. exposure so that they can be started on these antiretroviral medications to try to halt the infection actually happening. So I think that's the first thing that's really important. for folks to know, is that it's not something where you can wait a week or 2 weeks and say, oh, I probably need to go in and have a conversation about this PEP that I keep hearing about. But back to your question, I think, you know, kind of one of the concerns that we have been addressing is not only is there a lack of awareness about PEP and PrEP, that people have kind of just kind of always thought that it was either kind of abstinence or use condoms was kind of the way to prevent them from acquiring HIV. So people don't even know that there's these other options and kind of what we call a prevention toolkit for them to actually be able to choose to actually use PEP as a preventative method or to talk to a medical provider about being on PrEP where they would take an antiretroviral every single day, you know, in order to prevent themselves from acquiring HIV. And so we've got a couple of things going on is that people in the community, John Q. Public, they don't know about this. But then we also have another issue of, you know, these are medications that have to be prescribed by a medical provider. And so we have received many reports over particularly the last year that people have presented, particularly for PEP, at emergency department or in a primary care provider practice, and they have walked in informed and said, I feel like I may have been exposed to HIV. I've heard about this thing called PEP, and I'd like to use it. And the person has said, I don't know what you're talking about. So they don't know what PEP is. Or they say, come in, I'm not really sure what to prescribe you, I've sort of heard about this, I think there's this line that I can call and maybe get some advice. So we're concerned that, you know, the people who actually are kind of well-informed to go and proactively talk to their medical provider, then they get there and the medical provider doesn't know about it. And so we've kind of got these two situations going on that kind of are ripe for disaster. And we want people to have access to this, and we want medical providers to know about this and that they can respond appropriately to people when they request it.
Great. Well, believe it or not, we've actually come to the end of our time available and didn't get to some of the other topics that I know we will hope to raise. So we'll have to have you or some of your colleagues back to talk about other things. We've been getting an update on the occasion of World AIDS Day, which was yesterday, December 1st, from two members of ACT UP New York, Terry and Yaden.
Can I offer a point of clarification?
Just quickly, please.
Yes. For PEP in New York State, for it to be paid for by, for people who need to get it free, if they cannot pay for it, they cannot wait more than 36 hours. The new state guidelines mean that any funder who provides it free or at low cost to patients, they have to respect that 36-hour guideline. And ideally, it should be within a few hours. 3 or 4 is the best-case scenario. So, it's definitely time is of the essence. If you've been exposed and you want post-exposure prophylaxis, go to the ER or call the hotline, call 311, and you can get, or there's pepinfo.com. There's, Google it, get an information resource, and get to a treatment provider immediately.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us on Health Action, Yaden and Terry.